Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on CUTV News Radio. It is a pleasure to have you with us today. It's noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific. And we are broadcasting, of course, all across the United States, Canada, and globally. So we welcome everybody all across the world this Monday, kicking off your week with us right here on CUTV News Radio Live. And what a wonderful week we have ahead for you of multiple guests who are doing extraordinary things to make our world a better place. And somebody who's doing just that is Susan Hodgkinson. She is located in the Boston, Massachusetts area, and she is the author of The Dignity Mindset, A Leader's Guide to Building Gender Equity at Work. You know, the data is in, and when 30% of an organization's senior leadership is comprised of women, it really leads to improved financial performance, which is a wonderful thing. CEOs that can't or won't work towards inclusion are really failing in their leadership and fiduciary responsibilities. So how do organizations attract, retain, and advance talented women of all colors? Susan Hodgkinson is a leadership management expert, internationally recognized keynote speaker, and executive coach. Susan's new leadership book is The Dignity Mindset, A Leader's Guide to Building Gender Equity at Work. Now, drawing on her decades of coaching and consulting experience backed by a wide range of academic and business research, Susan has highlighted the factors that inhibit true inclusion, providing concrete strategies and program ideas to help companies finally deliver on their talent management and inclusion objectives. She says leading an inclusive workforce is a leadership competency, not a passing fad. Leaders who have not yet immersed themselves really in how to think and behave inclusively are headed towards obsolescence. Now, the new book, The Dignity Mindset, offers new, thoughtful, insightful solutions with a system-wide, concrete, actionable set of steps your organization can take right now with everyone's involvement to create a winning approach to gender equity. She says to be a dignity-driven leader, you have to make space for women's voices, call out biased behavior, keep your eyes open, and really reconsider socializing routines that impact women. It's all about embracing new ideas to help organizations get to where they need to go in a compassionate way. So she says it's really about addressing the issue with substantive ideas and experiences, which is very important. Women CEOs in the USA are astonishingly rare, believe it or not. As of 2018, only 24 of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies were women. But Susan says, it's not about diversity, it's about gender equity and inclusion. Women comprise over 40% of heads of households in the US. Many make it to mid-management, but very few advance beyond that. So it's important we all understand what's preventing the upward mobility of talented women and clear the pathways to the C-suite. The old line is, I don't see gender and I don't see color. But in practice, it's important that we see and really understand people who are different than us. That means each of us has to invest the time and the effort to expand our networks and build trusting relationships with people who are different from ourselves. If women in the United States received equal pay, poverty for working women would be reduced by half and add $482 billion to the U.S. economy. Eliminating the gap would also help everyone finance their retirement and ensure everyone paying into the Social Security system is going to receive their benefits as a result of that as well. So it's really amazing the work that she's doing, and she's very excited about this book. Last we chatted, she was putting the finishing touches on the book, And it is now out, and it's been a labor of love for Susan Hutchinson. So we're going to welcome her live right now to CUTV News Radio. This is part one of an exclusive two-part series with us here on CUTV News Radio Live. Good morning, Susan. Welcome to the show. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you with us here today, this Monday. And also, congratulations on the book. I know you've been really excited about this, and you're excited to share the details of it with us all. And it's been something truly, as I said earlier, that has been a labor of love. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jim. And it's great to talk with you again, hear your voice. And I do very much actually appreciate the thanks and the appreciation around the effort that this book took, because I'm usually not a complainer, but this thing was a lot of work. And I so deeply believed in it and really deeply believe in how important it is, and hopefully the conversation that it can set up towards action and change, that I just kept at it. And here we are, happily.
Absolutely. Let's, for audience that might be joining us for the very first time, let's talk first, before we get into the book, about, you know, the things that have inspired you. What first introduced you to the real appreciation and understanding of all of this, and your real passion for this work and for this message and for what you're hoping to accomplish with the book and really with everything that you do?
Thank you. It's true that about, exactly 25 years ago, I started up what I often call sort of the second half of my career, that one I still have, which is primarily an executive coaching practice for what we call high potential and high performing talent. And, from the beginning, I had always asked the HR executives to please, you know, match me with people who were the smartest people they had. In a certain way, I just really enjoy working with the smartest people because it's fun, but also I figured between the two of us, it might be an easier lift. So I did ask for that. And one of the best things that happened as a result of it is that for 25 years, I've been engaging in these one-on-one development efforts with all kinds of high potential and high performing people, all different colors, all different nationalities, certainly straight white men, women of color, white women, name it. And I have had the honor of sitting across a table from an array of different, very gifted people who, in fact, really did inspire ultimately what had to come forth in this book. And I would just say one thing before maybe I offer you a chance to direct us a little. I found in all this time that, engagement after engagement, women would come in, high potential, high performing, super strong performance reviews, highest feedback from their bosses. Everything should be just firing on all cylinders. And yet not all, but many were sort of tepid about what they might want to do next. And, you know, the meantime, the company's saying, this is where we see you. We want to keep have you grow and take on further leadership. And they just weren't sure. Again, not all of them, but a good number. And what I finally found to be the bottom line of where all that was coming from is that there is a sort of a confidence, not a gap, but a crevice. When we look at gender, women and men, it, probably in society, but certainly my study is in the workforce. And so part of what happened, as all of us in the profession are looking at how can we get inclusion to work, not only on gender, but on all dimensions. I just happened to work this one line because I had to put some limits around where I went in the book and the research. You know, part of what happened was, it was like, oh my goodness, we have been spending all our time and energy, me included, trying to help women figure out what they need to change about themselves to, you know, get over these issues in the organization, when in fact people like somebody I admire a lot over in Europe, Aviva Wittenberg-Cox, have been saying for some time, it's time to stop fixing women and look at the other side of the equation. And so where I decided to go in this book was at what are the things that happen to people once they arrive on the planet that color and create in their minds a viewpoint of who they are based on gender, and how after layer upon layer upon layer of that gets built, what we end up receiving from talent in the workforce, and just how hard it is to crack the code of messaging that's false that people have been given, you know, from the beginning. So the first half of the book is a presentation of the research of how we got the problem that we have. And the second half of the book on the dignity mindset is the tools. And really what it's about is, you know, Gloria Steinem has said it, Paul Polman from, you know, formerly of Unilever has said it. We at organizations have to help people unlearn all the things that they have learned to help them optimize what they can do in the organization and certainly find fulfillment in their work. And you're just 100% right. It's about humanity for me at the end of the day, but the business case on this topic is just so compelling and so set in stone at this point. It's beyond now, do women help drive profit? And we're looking at things like innovation intensity from women-led companies and more patents. And it's just compelling. So the question isn't, is it a good idea? We're way past that. It's like, why isn't it happening?
The title, The Dignity Mindset, I really love the title. When you were thinking about what the title should be, what was it about that particular title that really stood out and spoke to you? It really sums things up beautifully.
I thank you for that, and I think it does. There has been some discussion about dignity in the workforce, I think since the 1970s or 80s. But the idea that when I am talking in particular with coaching clients and the large group of them I'm so lucky to have who are African-American women specifically, oftentimes there's a discussion about where is the belief in a fundamental dignity and respect that I ought to have like everybody else when I show up into the workforce. And dignity is an incredibly powerful word, and it's an incredibly, to me, a very powerful idea. One thing I learned as I researched how people have thought about dignity is that it has to be decoupled from respect, because dignity is something, a dignity mindset is something that we say every person, but it's a belief system that every person arrived on planet Earth, wherever they landed, and in whatever shape or form, having the same equal value and worth as every other human being, stop. And then I realized there's something missing. And that second piece that was missing is, additionally, all human beings, not just men, not just women, have the same fundamental set of needs as all others. And that came from the great Abraham Maslow's work, which I had studied a great deal earlier in my career when he talks about the hierarchy of human needs. And so when you think about the dignity mindset as I've fashioned it for this book, it's really those two things together. One, a belief system that every single human being has the same worth fundamentally as every other, and that along with that comes a shared set of very basic needs. Safety and shelter, I have food and a roof over my head. Self-esteem, I'm not made to be shamed or feel like I don't, you know, I don't have what it takes to be a good performer in the company. You see that a lot in school, for kids bully other kids, and that's to crush their self-esteem. Belongingness to an organization. And when you lift up the data that's in this book and from which I, you know, I got it from other research on the absence of belongingness, which I can measure as trustworthiness and engagement by women, number one, and then parse it out by women of color, Asian women, Latina women, Black women, outside the U.S., African-American women, you really begin to see that there's another crevice of disconnect in the glue that should hold people together in an organization, and the reason women keep leaving is because of the absence of this sense of belongingness, that ultimately if they had it they could move on to the ultimate in the Maslow's work, which is self-actualization in their work. And I want to tell you, I've heard recently some thought leaders actually talking, and I agree with them and have been thinking it some time myself, that work can be a place where you not only go in and toil all day, but you self-actualize in your job. You become something bigger, better, and more wonderful within yourself by the doing of your work and the collaborating with your colleagues than you would have otherwise without them. And I think that's where we should set the bar. And then when you look at the realities that we have, and I just had to keep in some kind of a guardrail, so I picked the U.S., it takes your breath away how far away we are from that, certainly in some sectors.
Mm. That's so true, absolutely. What are some things additionally, Susan, that surprised you as you were writing this book?
Well, a couple things have happened as I've put out pieces of the work, and actually it's been out a couple of weeks, and I've had a chance to present it to some leadership teams, which was the goal of this. This was not to take women again offsite, although I'm delighted to do that, and I'm hoping that I do. This was to say, okay, let's talk as a group of senior leaders, the ones who can set the vision, set the values, the belief systems. And of course, why do we care about the belief system? Because it's the belief system that then translates into operating behaviors in organizations. And so when I got the chance to get this message out, the first time it was to an all-women's audience some months ago. The book wasn't quite complete, and we were talking about where gender attitudes come from. And when we look back at it, I think people continue to be fascinated by an incredible insight that a professor in the UK, Laura Mulvey, had in the 1970s. She and her husband went to study film and literature. They called it popular film. I prefer not to call it that, but rather to call it mass consumption media. But Mulvey's words were popular film. And what she understood was that what we're presented as a culture about who we are and who our heroes and heroines are and, you know, how women and men are supposed to be, it's all set up in the frame of something she called the male gaze. And what she described is a narrative and a picture where the person who wrote it, directed it, staffed it, you know, casted it, filmed it, and delivered it and then watched it was all of one mindset. And that was a man who was the main audience. And this was produced with women positioned in this film or book as something for his pleasure. And so the first thing I want to say about it is when I looked at that and understood how true that is in media today, I realized that's a huge piece of the problem we have. And the second thing I want to say straight away is, there is not one moment in my thinking or in this book where I think it's healthy to get into a blame and shame for anybody, including straight white men, many of whom I have had the distinct honor of working with and coaching. I think there are a lot of incredibly gifted, talented, straight white male leaders, some of who I've worked with and some who I just admire from afar, like Paul Tolman, who, you know, got up every day, put their suit on, put whatever their work outfit on, and went to work like they were never sort of thought otherwise they should be doing with their life, but going to work and earning a living for their family. And they still lead in the United States in heart attacks, heart disease, I mean, all that stress. And all of a sudden, one day, I think it's fair to say straight white men in the U.S. sort of woke up and went, oh, my God, I've turned into some horrible villain. And I had no idea I was doing anything wrong. I just thought I was going to work and doing what I was supposed to do. And so what I do think is coming from that place, when we bring leaders, many men and women together, as I did just last week with a leadership team of a privately held firm, there was around the room sort of a little bit of shock and awe to the realization that the male gaze not only lives on in cinema. And I mean, I didn't waste more than three words in the narrative in the book on the Me Too movement because, I mean, there's so much out there already speaking for itself. But if you moved on from film, and again, remembering how much of this stuff is what is the culture carrier and the culture code and the who I am code that all of us get, notwithstanding what we might hear at home. The idea is that then you migrate from, you know, I think parents in a study by Journal Adolescent Health support Mulvey's work by saying 2 years ago in a global study of 29 countries, including U.S., that there's a narrative that comes from parents, wittingly or unwittingly, and society around them, at school, at sports, at whatever, religiously, that says men are born to dominate and women are born to be subjugated. This will happen because men are physically stronger, women are weaker. Men are the ones who are the aggressors and sort of predators. And that's the idea men get, which is really unfortunate for men as well as women. And women are the ones who have to cover up and be careful and be always looking behind, you know, to stay safe. And so think about that for a sec. That message coming from birth, then people hearing all the messages they might get in their house of all different kinds, wonderful messages of gender equality or not. And then moving along to video games and all the other pieces of social media that now are even more powerful than film because there's active participation in those games. So now I'm not just passively watching, you know, Star Wars or Toy Story, both films that don't feature women in meaningful roles. I should correct myself, a Toy Story. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like I'm looking at Grand Theft Auto 5, 30 minutes of video game playing time, active participation, first person, where there are no women characters, only prostitutes, nagging housewives, and these feminists that people laugh at, along with killing numbers of them as players move through the game to do whatever they do to succeed. In League of Legends, another video game, first person active participation. You know, you can dress up women in the costumes you want them to be in. And the trick is here that it's not just men playing these games and absorbing this intensity of, you know, first person active participation, becoming that thing with the changes in their brainwaves to prove it. It's also girls and women playing those. So what are they then to believe? Move through to the college experience. I think, you know, I talked about college age kids, but 1 in 4 women is now sexually assaulted in college in those 4 years of undergraduate. And college is now a place where women have to go and study, but also have to figure out how to stay safe. The shame, which I will shame, the Harvard men's soccer team of 2016 or 17 that wrote all those disgusting things about the freshman women's soccer team. Just blowing their esteem out of the water first year of college is an example. And I was proud that Drew Faust, who was the president of Harvard, then shut down the team. But the point is, Mulvey's male gaze is sort of at the center of what gets carried through and brought forth into a human being's headset when they show up after college, for the most part, or through high school, in our institutions of work. So, of course, we have to start with unlearning, rebuilding empathy, recognizing that it hurts somebody's feelings. They actually have feelings and needs, and when you ignore them or you try to make suggestive comments on an email or you reach over them to their boss or their clients, even though you report to a woman and you just don't happen to like it and start to try to build relationships, shutting her out. I don't know where you got those ideas, but I guess I really do. And that's from all the data and we see about what you're exposed to growing up.
Wow, that's a lot. That's amazing. I mean, the amount of time and effort and research that you've put into really just super serving this topic is absolutely extraordinary. And, you know, you discussed at length how we learn gender bias as well. This myth, is it a hegemonic myth that concerns you most overall? Define that for us some more, and why this extraordinary concern as well that you have as a result.
Yeah. Well, first of all, so the male hegemonic power myth is this long-standing, one of my my heroes in this work, his name is Michael Kaufman, who's based out of Canada and has done extraordinary work with men and boys on this topic. You know, he talks about it as an 8,000-year-old myth that, you know, gives all the power to one gender. So that's 50% of the world's population, and it leaves the other 50% to somehow figure out how to survive when that power is not shared or it's abused. And it's a system, right? It's a system that's had a long-standing existence, and it's just the narrative that gets repeated and repeated and repeated because it's in, you know, half the population's best interest to keep it. And for a lot of women, it's also sort of like, well, that's how it's supposed to be. I guess it shouldn't be any different. And so it's very complicated. You know, it's not, again, there's not sort of good guy, bad guy in this other than people who overtly, who know better and do indeed thrash and put an X through the concept of dignity and also through the fundamentals of human needs and just go about doing what they're doing, you know, ruining a lot of people's lives in the process. But yeah, I think that when we look at what the outcomes are and what we have to really be concerned about, it really is the fact that we get people in organizations who either don't know how to work with the change, which is part of what the second part of the book also does, but also to get comfortable with the idea that, you know, if you step away from that win-lose of everything, I have to get more power or I didn't win today, and convert over to, you know, how many other lights did I light up in the course of my work today that helps the organization perform better, but also reach people a little bit more deeply than, you know, the work task we were talking about, maybe even in their souls, and lifted them. And in the doing of that, my light didn't lose one single piece of flame. It's not dimmed, I'm sorry, at all. And part of what we want to do is just get people to understand you don't have to lose by this change. You know, you can actually win. And if you increase net margin by 1%, and the average net margin on large companies in this country is 6%, that's a really big number. And everybody benefits from that.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. 100%.
One piece I want to add real quickly to your question, may I?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. I think perhaps we can talk more next time, but also in the research, one of the things that I discovered that was very powerful is that there's a large discussion in many circles internationally about the progress Iceland as a country has made on gender equity. There's work every day that has to happen to keep it where it's going, but it's doing really well. So it came out number one in World Economic Forum's survey on, you know, scores for gender equity across the systems of its society, educational, political, social, cultural. One of the things that's really interesting is in those hegemonic messages that come along, that girls can't do math and boys are good at math here in the States, in Iceland, because the message is, women and men, girls and boys are equal, and girls are really good at math. Girls in Iceland score higher in math, just a little bit, than do boys and women do, than do men. And it tells you it's about belief systems, not about something in our brain. And one of the worries about that we, of course, have is how does that shut women out of emerging technologies and employment of tomorrow?
These are really incredible questions that we really, really need to take a really good, hard look at and appreciate and then act upon. And you've got that ball rolling in such a beautiful way, not only through your efforts and your passion, Susan, but of course this extraordinary new hot off the presses book, which again, we extend our congratulations to you because it's been something you've been working on for so long. The Dignity Mindset, A Leader's Guide to Building Gender Equity at Work. If you'd like to find out more, of course, you can go to thepersonalbrandcompany.com. That's thepersonalbrandcompany.com. Is the book also available at Amazon as well, Susan?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, absolutely, Jim.
Fantastic. always a pleasure getting a chance to speak with you. And we look forward to part two next week as well. And thanks for being with us on the show today, Susan. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Just a pleasure as well. And it was very nice talking with you. Thanks a lot.
You're very, very welcome. You have a wonderful rest of your day as well. Jim Masters here, CUTV News Radio Live. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this very important, inspirational, thought-provoking episode with our very special guest, Susan Hutchinson. Again, she is a leadership management expert, internationally recognized keynote speaker, executive coach, and she is debuting her new leadership book, The Dignity Mindset, A Leader's Guide to Building Gender Equity at Work. The website again, thepersonalbrandcompany.com. Book is also available at all major locations, including Barnes & Noble and Amazon and more. Once again, for all of us here, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, stay tuned. I'll be back in about a half an hour, less than 30 minutes, with another great guest from around the world and another great show right here on CUTV News Radio Live. Till then, thanks for being with us. Have a terrific day, and bye for now.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.